was her thong. It was a test, and I really hoped he failed. He didn't answer, but one look at his eyes told me he hadn't failed. I marched to the bed, grabbed a pillow, and hurled it at him. He sidestepped, and it flopped against the wall. "You lied to me," I said. "You told me there was nothing going on between you and Marcy, but when two people have nothing between them, they don't swap wardrobes and they don't get inside each other's cars late at night dressed in what could pass as lingerie." I was suddenly aware of my own clothes, or lack thereof. I stood feet away from Patch in nothing more than a spaghetti strap tank and boy briefs. Well, there wasn't a lot I could do about it now, was there?
"Swap wardrobes?"
"She was wearing your hat."
"She was having a bad hair day."
My jaw dropped. "Is that what she told you? And you fell for it?"
"She's not as bad as you're making her out to be."
He did not just say that. I thrust a finger at my eye. "Not that bad. See this? She gave it to me." "What are you doing here?" I demanded again, my rage boiling to an all-time high. Patch leaned back against the bureau and folded his arms.
"I came by to see how you're doing."
"Again. I have a black eye. Thanks for asking," I snapped.
"Need ice?"
"I need you to get out of my dream." I ripped a second pillow off the bed and heaved it violently at him. This time he caught it.
"The devil's handbag, black eye, comes with the territory."
He shoved the pillow back at me as if to punctuate his opinion.
"Are you defending Marcy?"
He shook his head.
"I don't need to. She handled herself. You, on the other hand..."
I pointed at the door.
"Out!"
When he didn't move, I marched within range and whipped the pillow against him. "I said get out of my dream, you lying traitress!" He wrestled the pillow out of my grasp and walked me backward until I came up against the wall, his motorcycle boots flush against my toes. I was drawing breath to finish my sentence and call him the worst name I could think up, when Patch tugged on the waistband of my underpants and pulled me even closer. His eyes were liquid black, his breathing slow and deep. I stood that way, suspended between him and the wall, my pulse stepping up as I became more aware of his body and the masculine scent of leather and mint lingering on his skin. I felt my resistance start to ebb away. Suddenly, and without heeding anything but my own desire, I curled my fingers into his shirt and pulled him the rest of the way against me. It felt so good to have him close again. I'd missed him so much. But I hadn't realized just how much until this moment. "Don't make me regret this," I said, breathless.
"You haven't regretted me once."
He kissed me, and I answered so hungrily I thought my lips would bruise. I pushed my fingers up through his hair, clutching him closer. My mouth was all over his, chaotic and wild and starved. All the messy and complicated emotions I'd gone through since we broke up dropped away, as I drowned myself in the crazed and compulsive need to be with him. His hands were under my tank, expertly sliding to the small of my back to hold me against him. I was trapped between the wall and his body, fumbling at the buttons on his shirt, my knuckles brushing solid muscle beneath. I rucked his shirt down off his shoulders, slamming the door on my brain, which warned that I was making a huge mistake. I didn't want to hear myself out, afraid of what I'd find on the other side. I knew I was setting myself up for more pain, but I couldn't resist him. All I could think was that if Patch really was in my dream, this whole night could be our secret. The archangels couldn't see us. Here, all their rules went up in smoke. We could do whatever we wanted, and they would never find out. No one would. Patch met me halfway, pulling his arms free from the sleeves and tossing the shirt aside. I slid my hands along perfectly sculpted muscle that sent a ripple of mania through me. I knew he couldn't feel any of this physically, but I told myself love was driving him now. His love for me. I didn't allow myself to think about his inability to feel my touch, or how much or little this encounter really meant to him. I simply wanted him. Now. He lifted me up and I wrapped my legs around his waist. I saw his gaze cut to the dresser, then the bed, and my heart flip-flopped with desire. Rational thought had abandoned me. All I knew was that I would do whatever it took to hang on to this unhinged high. Everything was happening way too fast, but the wild certainty of where we were headed was a balm to the cold, destructive anger I'd felt simmering under the surface the past week. It was the last thought I registered before my fingertip brushed the place where his wings connected to his back. Before I could stop it, I was sucked inside his memory in a snap. The smell of leather and the smooth, slippery feel of it against the underside of my thighs told me I was in Patch's Jeep even before my eyes had fully adapted to the darkness. I was in the back seat, with Patch behind the wheel and Marcy in the passenger seat. She was wearing the same slinky dress and tall boots I'd seen her in less than 3 hours ago. Tonight, then, Patch's memory had whisked me only a few hours back.
"She ruined my dress," Marcy said, picking at the fabric clinging to her thighs. "Now I'm freezing, and I reek of cherry coke."
"You want my jacket?" Patch asked, eyes on the road.
"Where is it?"
"Back seat."
Marcy unlocked her seatbelt, got a knee up on the console, and grabbed Patch's leather jacket off the seat beside me. When she was facing forward again, she tugged the dress up over her head and dropped it on the floor at her feet. Other than her underwear, she was completely naked. I made a little choked sound in my throat. She threaded her arms into Patch's jacket and zipped it up. "Take the next left," she instructed.
"I know the way to your house," Patch said, steering the Jeep right.
"I don't want to go home. In 2 blocks, turn left." But after 2 blocks, Patch continued straight.
"Well, you're no fun," Marcy said with a jaded pout. "Aren't you just a little bit curious where I was going to take us?"
"It's late."
"Are you turning me down?" she asked coyly.
"I'm dropping you off, then I'm going back to my place."
"Why can't I come?"
"Maybe someday," Patch said.
"Oh, really?" I wanted to snap at Patch. "That's more than I ever got."
"That's not very specific."
Marcy smirked, kicking her heels up on the dash, showing off inches of leg. Patch said nothing.
"Tomorrow night, then," Marcy said.
She paused and continued in a velvety voice.
"It's not like you have somewhere else to be. I know Nora broke up with you."
Patch's hands tightened on the steering wheel.
"I heard she's with Scott Parnell now. You know, the new guy. He's cute, but she traded down."
"I don't really want to talk about Nora."
"Good, because neither do I. I want to talk about us."
"I thought you had a boyfriend."
The key word in that sentence is had. Patch took a short right, bouncing the Jeep into Marcy's driveway. He didn't cut the engine.
"Good night, Marcy."
She stayed in her seat a moment, then laughed.
"You're not going to walk me to the door?"
"You're a strong, capable girl."
"If my daddy's watching, he won't be happy,"
she said, reaching over to straighten Patch's collar, her hand lingering longer than was appropriate.
"He's not watching."
"How do you know?"
"Trust me."
Marcy lowered her voice further, sultry and smooth.
"You know, I really admire your willpower. You keep me guessing, and I like that. But let me make one thing perfectly clear. I'm not looking for a relationship. I don't like messy, complicated things. I don't want hurt feelings, confusing signals, or jealousy. I just want fun. I'm looking for a good time. Think about it."
For the first time, Patch turned to face Marcy.
"I'll keep that in mind," he said at last.
From her profile, I saw Marcy smile. She leaned across the console and gave Patch a slow, hot kiss. He started to pull back, then stopped. At any moment, he could have broken the kiss off, but he didn't.
"Tomorrow night," Marcy murmured, pulling away at last. "Your place."
"Your dress," he told her,
gesturing at the damp heap on the floor.
"Wash it and give it back to me tomorrow night."
She pushed her way out of the Jeep and ran up to her front door, where she slipped inside. My arms went slack around Patch's neck. I felt too slapped by what I'd seen to form a single word. It was as if he'd thrown a bucket of ice water on me. My lips were swollen from the roughness of his kiss, my heart just as inflamed. Patch was in my dream. We were sharing it together. Somehow, it was real. The whole idea was eerily surreal, bordering on impossible. But it had to be true. If he wasn't here, if he hadn't injected himself quietly and stealthily into my dream, I couldn't have touched his scars and been catapulted into his memory. But I had. The memory was living, valid, and all too real. Patch could tell by my reaction that whatever I'd seen wasn't good. His arms bracketed my shoulders, and he tipped his head back to stare at the ceiling. "What did you see?" he asked quietly. The sound of my heart pounded between us.
"You kissed Marcy,"
I said, biting my lip hard to stall the tears welling up. He dragged his hands down his face, then squeezed the bridge of his nose.
"Tell me it's a mind game. Tell me it's a trick. Tell me she has some kind of power over you, that you don't have any choice when it comes to being with her."
"It's complicated."
"No," I said with a fierce shake of my head. "Don't tell me it's complicated. Nothing is complicated anymore. Not after everything we've been through. What do you even hope to get out of a relationship with her?"
His eyes flicked to mine.
"Not love."
A certain emptiness gnawed its way inside me. All the pieces came together and I suddenly understood. Being with Marcy was about cheap satisfaction. Self-satisfaction. He really did see us as conquests. He was a player. Every girl was a new challenge, a short-term hookup to broaden his horizons. He found success in the art of seduction. He didn't care about the middle or end of a story, only the beginning. And just like all the other girls, I'd made the huge mistake of falling in love with him. The moment I did, he ran. Well, he'd never have to worry about Marcy confessing her love. The only person she loved was herself.
"You make me sick,"
I said, my voice trembling with accusation. Patch crouched down, elbows on his knees, face buried in his hands.
"I didn't come here to hurt you."
"Why did you come? To fool around behind the Archangel's backs? To hurt me more than you already have?" I didn't wait for an answer. Reaching for my neck, I yanked at the silver chain he'd given me days ago. It snapped free at the back of my neck hard enough that I should have winced, but I was in too much pain to notice a little more. I should have made him take the chain back the day I called it quits between us, but I realized a little late that up until this moment, I hadn't given up hope. I'd still believed in us. I'd clung to the belief that there was still a way to cut a deal with the stars that would bring Patch back to me.
"What an utter waste."
I flung the chain at him. "And I want my ring back." His dark eyes stayed settled on me a moment longer, then he bent and scooped up his shirt.
"No."
"What do you mean, no? I want it back."
"You gave it to me,"
he said quietly, but not gently.
"Well, I changed my mind."
My face was flushed, my whole body hot with rage. He was keeping the ring because he knew how much it meant to me. He was keeping it because despite his rise in stature to guardian angel, his soul was just as black as it had been the day I met him. And the biggest mistake I'd ever made was fooling myself into believing otherwise.
"I gave it to you when I was stupid enough to think I loved you," I thrust out my hand. "Give it back, now."
I couldn't stand the thought of losing my dad's ring to Patch. He didn't deserve it. He didn't deserve to keep the one tangible reminder I had of real love. Ignoring my request, Patch walked out. I opened my eyes. I clicked on the lamp, my vision returning to full color. I sat up, a hot flash of adrenaline warming my skin. Reaching for my neck, I felt for Patch's silver chain, but it wasn't there. I swept my hand across the wrinkled sheets, thinking it had fallen off while I slept. But the chain was gone. The dream was real. Patch had discovered a way to visit me while I slept. Chapter 11. Monday after school, V dropped me off at the library. I took a moment outside the entrance to call my mom for our daily check-in. As usual, she told me work was keeping her busy, and I told her school was doing the same thing for me. Inside, I took the elevator to the media lab on the third floor, checked my email, browsed Facebook, and scanned Perez Hilton. Just to torture myself, I Googled the black hand again. The same links popped up. I hadn't really expected anything new, had I? Finally, with nowhere left to procrastinate, I flipped open my chemistry text and resigned myself to studying. It was late by the time I called it quits to go hunt down a vending machine. Out the library's west-facing windows, the sun was tucked deep in the horizon, and night was closing in fast. I bypassed the elevator in favor of the stairs, feeling the need for a little exercise. I'd been sitting so long, my legs were beginning to tingle with sleep. In the lobby, I fed a few dollars to the vending machine and carried pretzels and a can of cranberry juice back to the third floor. When I returned to the media lab, V was sitting on my desk, her glossy yellow high heels propped on my chair. Her expression was a mix of smug amusement and annoyance. She held a small black envelope in the air, caught between two of her fingers.
"This is for you," she said, tossing the envelope on the desk. "And so's this."
She held out a paper bakery bag rolled at the neck.
"Thought you might be hungry."
Judging by the disdain in V's expression, I had a bad feeling about the card, and took the opportunity to give my attention to what was inside the bag. "Cupcakes." V grinned.
"The bakery lady told me they're organic. Not sure how you make an organic cupcake, and not sure why they cost extra, but there you go.
You're my hero.
How much longer do you think you'll be?"
30 minutes, tops.
She laid the keys to the neon next to my backpack. "Rickson and I are going to grab something to eat, so you'll have to be your own chauffeur tonight."
I parked the neon in the underground garage, row B. "I only have a fourth of a tank left, so don't go crazy." I took the keys, trying to ignore the unpleasant sting in my heart that I instantly recognized as jealousy. I was jealous of V's new relationship with Rickson, jealous of her dinner plans, jealous that she was now closer to Patch than I was, because even though V had never mentioned it, I was sure she bumped into Patch when she was with Rickson. For all I knew, the three of them watched movies together at night. The three of them, lounging on Rickson's sofa, while I sat in the farmhouse alone. I desperately wanted to ask V about Patch, but the truth of the matter was, I couldn't. I'd broken up with him. I'd made my bed, and it was time to lie in it. Then again, how was one little inquiry going to hurt? "Hey, V?" She turned back at the door.
"Yeah?"
I opened my mouth, and that was when I remembered my pride. V was my best friend, but she also had a big mouth. If I asked about Patch, I risked him hearing about it secondhand. He'd find out just how hard a time I was having getting over him. I pulled on a smile.
"Thanks for the cupcakes." "Anything for you, babe."
After V left, I peeled back the paper wrapping on one of the cupcakes and ate alone in the quiet mechanical hum of the lab. I did another half hour of homework and ate two more cupcakes before I finally dared a look at the black envelope sitting at the edge of my vision. I knew I couldn't avoid it all night. Breaking the seal, I shook out a black card with a small heart embossed at the center. The word "sorry" was scripted across it. The card was scented with a bittersweet perfume. I raised the card to my nose and breathed deeply, trying to place the strangely intoxicating scent. The smell of burned fruit and chemical spices stung all the way down the back of my throat. I opened the card. "I was a jerk last night. Forgive me." Automatically, I slid the card an arm's length away. Patch. I didn't know what to make of his apology, but I didn't like the commotion it caused inside me. Yes, he'd been a jerk. And did he think a card from the drugstore could negate it? If so, he was underestimating the damage he'd caused. He'd kissed Marcy. Kissed her. And not only that, but he'd invaded my dreams. I had no idea how he'd done it, but when I woke in the morning, I knew he'd been there. It was more than a little unnerving. If he could invade the privacy of my dreams, what else could he do?
10 minutes until closing, a librarian whispered from the doorway.
I sent my 3-paragraph essay on amino acids to the printer, then scooped up my books and wedged them inside my backpack. I picked up Patch's card, hesitated once, then ripped it multiple times and tossed the scraps into the trash can. If he wanted to say sorry, he could do it in person, not through V and not in my dreams. Halfway down the aisle to pick up my print job, I reached out to steady myself on the nearest desk. The right side of my body felt heavier than the left, and my balance wavered. I took another step, and my right leg crumpled, as if made of paper. I crouched down, gripping the desk with both hands, tucking my head between my elbows to get blood flowing to my brain again. A warm, drowsy feeling swirled through my veins. Straightening my legs, I came to a wobbly stand, but something was wrong with the walls. They were stretched abnormally long and narrow, as if I was looking at them through a mirror at a funhouse. I blinked hard several times, attempting to bring my vision to a focal point. My bones filled with iron, refusing to move, and my eyelids sank against the stark fluorescent lights. In a panic, I ordered them open, but my body overruled all. I felt warm fingers curl around my mind, threatening to drag it off to sleep.
"The perfume," I thought vaguely. "In Patch's card." I was on my hands and knees now. Strange rectangles wavered all around, spinning before me. Doors. The room was lined with open doors. But the faster I crawled toward them, the faster they jumped back. Off in the distance, I heard a somber tick-tock. I moved away from the sound, lucid enough to know that the clock was at the back of the room, opposite the door. Moments later, I realized that my arms and legs were no longer moving.
the sensation of crawling nothing more than an illusion in my head. Scratchy, industrial-grade carpet cushioned my cheek. I fought once more to push myself up, then shut my eyes, all light spiraling away. I woke in the dark. Artificially cool air tingled my skin, and the quiet hum of machines whispered all around. I got my hands under me, but when I tried to raise myself up, dots of purple and black danced across my vision. I swallowed the texture of cotton thick in my mouth and rolled onto my back. That was when I remembered I was still in the library. At least I was pretty sure that's where I was. I didn't remember leaving. But what was I doing on the floor? I tried to remember how I got here. Patch's card. I'd breathed in the tangy, bitter perfume. Shortly after, I'd collapsed on the floor. Had I been drugged? Had Patch drugged me? I lay there, heart thumping, eyes blinking so rapidly the blinks came one on top of the other. I tried to get up a second time, but it felt as if someone had a steel boot planted in the center of my chest. With a second, more determined heave, I pulled myself to sitting. Clinging to a desk, I dragged myself all the way to standing. My brain protested the vertigo, but my eyes located the blurry green exit sign above the media lab door. I tottered over. I turned the handle. The door opened an inch, then caught. I was about to tug harder when something on the other side of the window set in the door caught my eye. I frowned. That's weird. Someone had tied one end of a length of rope to the outer door handle, and the other end to the handle of the door one room down. I smacked my hand against the glass. Hello? I shouted groggily. Can anyone hear me? I tried the door again, pulling with all my might, which wasn't much since my muscles seemed to melt like hot butter the minute I tried to exert them. The rope was strung so tight between the two handles, I could only bring the lab door roughly 5 inches out of the frame, not nearly enough to squeeze through. Is anyone there? I shouted through the door crack. I'm trapped on the third floor. The library answered with silence. My eyes were fully adapted to the darkness now, and I found the clock on the wall. 11? Could that be right? Had I really slept more than 2 hours? I pulled out my cell, but there was no signal. I tried to log on to the internet, but was repeatedly informed that there were no available networks. Looking frantically around the media lab, I combed my eyes over every object, searching for something I could use to get out. Computers, swivel chairs, filing cabinets, nothing jumped out at me. I knelt down beside the floor vent and shouted, "Can anyone hear me? I'm trapped in the media lab on the third floor." I waited, praying to hear a response. My one hope was that there was still a librarian around, finishing up last-minute work before heading out. But it was an hour shy of midnight, and I knew the odds were stacked against me. Out in the main library, gears clanked into motion as the cage elevator at the end of the hall rose up from the ground level. I jerked my head toward the sound. Once, when I was 4 or 5, my dad took me to the park to teach me how to ride my bike without training wheels. By the end of the afternoon, I could ride all the way around the quarter-mile loop without help. My dad gave me a big hug and told me it was time to go home and show my mom. I begged for 2 more loops, and we compromised on 1. Halfway around the loop, I lost my balance and tipped over. As I was riding my bike, I saw a big brown dog not far off. It was staring at me. In that moment, as we stood watching each other, I heard a voice whisper, "Don't move." I gulped a breath and held it, even though my legs wanted to run as fast as they could to the safety of my dad. The dog's ears pricked, and he started toward me in an aggressive lope. I shivered with fear but kept my feet rooted. The closer the dog came, the more I wanted to run, but I knew the moment I moved, the dog's animal instinct to chase would kick in. Halfway to me, the dog lost interest in my statue-like body and took off in a new direction. I asked my dad if he'd heard the same voice telling me to hold still, and he said it was instinct. If I listened to it, 9 times out of 10, I'd make the best move. Instinct was speaking now. Get out. I grabbed a monitor off the closest desk and threw it against the window. The glass smashed, leaving a huge hole in the center. I snatched the 3-hole punch off the community work desk just inside the door and used it to knock out the remaining glass. Then I dragged a chair over, climbed up, braced my shoe on the window frame, and jumped out to the hall. The elevator hissed and vibrated higher, passing the second level. I covered the hall in a sprint. I pumped my arms harder, knowing I had to reach the stairwell adjacent to the elevator before the elevator rose much higher and whoever was inside saw me. I tugged on the stairwell door, expending several precious seconds as I took the time to close it noiselessly behind me. On the far side of the door, the elevator ground to a halt. The retractable door rattled open and someone stepped out. I used the railing to propel myself faster, keeping my shoes light on the stairs. I was halfway down the second flight when the stairwell door opened above me. I stopped mid-stride, not wanting to alert whoever was up there to my location.
Nora?
My hand slipped on the railing. It was my dad's voice.
Nora, are you there?
I swallowed, wanting to cry out to him. Then I remembered the townhouse.
Quit hiding. You can trust me. Let me help you. Come out where I can see you.
His tone was strange and demanding. At the townhouse, when my dad's voice had first spoken to me, it was soft and gentle. That same voice had told me we weren't alone and I needed to leave. When he spoke again, his voice was different. It sounded forceful and deceiving. What if my dad had tried to contact me? What if he'd been chased away, and the second strange voice was someone pretending to be him? I was struck by the thought that someone could be impersonating my dad to lure me close. Heavy footsteps descended the stairs at a run, jerking me out of my speculations. He was coming after me. I clattered down the stairs, no longer worrying about keeping quiet. Faster, I screamed to myself. Run faster! He was gaining ground, barely more than a flight away. When my shoes hit the ground level, I shoved through the stairwell door, crossed the lobby, and flung myself out the front doors and into the night. The air was warm and quiet. I was running for the cement steps leading down to the street when I made a split-second change of plans. I climbed the handrail to the left of the doors, dropping 10 or so feet to a small grassy courtyard below. Above me, the library doors opened. I pressed back against the cement wall, my feet stirring trash and tumbleweeds. The minute I heard the slow tap of shoes descending the cement steps, I raced down the block. The library didn't have its own parking. It shared an underground garage with the courthouse. I ran down the parking ramp, ducked under the parking arm, and swept the garage for the neon. Where had V said she'd parked? Row B. I ran one aisle over and saw the tail end of the neon sticking out of a space. I rammed the key into the door, dropped behind the wheel, and cranked the engine. I'd just steered the neon up the exit ramp when a dark SUV swung around the corner. The driver gunned the engine, heading straight for me. I thrust the neon into second gear and stepped on the gas, pulling out in front of the SUV seconds before it would have blocked the exit and boxed me inside the garage. My mind was too frazzled to think clearly about where I was going. I floored it down another 2 blocks, ran a stop sign, then veered onto Walnut. The SUV accelerated onto Walnut behind me, holding my tail. The speed limit jumped to 45 and the lanes doubled to 2. I pushed the neon to 50, switching my eyes between the road and the rearview mirror. Without signaling, I yanked the steering wheel, cutting onto a side street. The SUV raised the curb, following me. I took 2 more right turns, circled the block, and got back on Walnut. I swerved in front of a white 2-door coupe, boxing it between me and the SUV. The traffic light ahead turned yellow, and I accelerated into the intersection as the light flashed red. With my eyes glued to the rearview mirror, I watched the white car roll to a stop. Behind it, the SUV came to a screeching halt. I took several sharp breaths. My pulse throbbed in my arms, and my hands were clamped tightly around the steering wheel. I took Walnut uphill, but as soon as I was on the back side of the hill, I crossed oncoming traffic and turned left. I bounced over the railroad tracks, weaving my way through a dark, dilapidated neighborhood of single-story brick houses. I knew where I was. Slaughterville. The neighborhood had earned its nickname over a decade ago when 3 teens gunned one another down at a playground. I slowed, as a house set far back from the street caught my attention. No lights. An open, empty, detached garage stood at the far back of the property. I reversed the neon up the driveway and into the garage. After triple-checking that the door locks were engaged, I killed the headlights. I waited, fearing that any moment the SUV's headlights would swing down the street. Rummaging through my purse, I dug out my cell.
"Hey," V answered.
"Who else touched the card from Patch?" I demanded, the words rattling.
"Huh?
Did Patch give you the card directly? Did Rixon? Who else touched it?"
"Wanna tell me what this is about?"
"I think I was drugged." Silence.
"You think the card was drugged?"
V repeated doubtfully at last. "The paper was laced with perfume," I explained impatiently. "Tell me who gave it to you. Tell me exactly how you got it."
"On my way to the library to drop off the cupcakes, Rixon called to see where I was," she recounted slowly. "We met up at the library and Patch was riding shotgun in Rixon's truck. Patch gave me the card and asked if I'd give it to you. I took the card, the cupcakes, and the neon's keys inside to you, then went back out to meet Rickson.
Nobody else touched the card?
Nobody.
Less than a half hour after smelling the card, I collapsed on the library floor. I didn't wake up for 2 hours.
V didn't answer right away, and I could practically hear her thinking everything through, trying to digest it. At last she said, "Are you sure it wasn't fatigue? You were in the library a long time. I couldn't work that long on homework without needing a nap."
"When I woke up," I pushed on, "someone was in the library with me. I think it was the same person who drugged me. They chased me through the library. I got out, but they followed me down Walnut."
Another baffled pause. "As much as I don't like Patch, I've got to tell you, I can't see him drugging you. He's a whack job, but he does have boundaries."
"Then who?"
My voice was a little shrill.
"I don't know. Where are you now?"
"Slaughterville."
"What? Get out of there before you get mugged."
"Come over. Stay the night here. We'll work this out. We'll figure out what happened." But the words felt like an empty consolation. V was just as perplexed as I was. I stayed hidden in the garage for what must have been another 20 minutes before I felt brave enough to go back on the streets. My nerves were frayed, my mind reeling. I opted against taking Walnut, thinking the SUV might be cruising up and down it right now, waiting to pick up my tail. Sticking to side streets, I ignored the speed limit and drove in a reckless hurry to V's. I wasn't far from her house when I noticed blue and red lights in the rearview mirror. Stopping the neon at the side of the road, I planted my head against the steering wheel. I knew I'd been speeding, and I was frustrated at myself for doing it, but of all the nights to get pulled over. A moment later, Knuckles rapped the window. I pushed the button to lower it.
"Well, well," Detective Basso said. "Long time no see."
"Any other cop," I thought. "Any other." He flashed his ticket pad.
"License and registration, you know the drill."
Since I knew there was no talking my way around a ticket, not with Detective Basso, I didn't see the point in putting on any pretense of contrition. I didn't know detective work included filling out speeding tickets. He gave a razor-thin smile.
"Where's the fire?"
"Can I just get my ticket and go home?"
"Any alcohol in the car?"
"Have a look around," I said, spreading my hands. He opened the door for me.
"Get out."
"Why?"
"Get out."
He pointed at the dashed line bisecting the road.
"And walk the line."
"You think I'm drunk?"
"I think you're crazy, but I'm checking your sobriety while I've got you here."
I swung out and slammed the door shut behind me. "How far?"
"Until I tell you to stop."
I concentrated on planting my feet on the line, but every time I looked down, my vision slanted. I could still feel the effects of the drug pecking away at my coordination, and the harder I concentrated on keeping my feet on the line, the more I felt myself swaying off into the road. "Can't you just give me the ticket, slap my wrist, and send me home?" My tone was insubordinate, but I'd gone cold on the inside. If I couldn't walk the line, Detective Basso might throw me in jail. I was already shaken, and I didn't think I could handle a night behind bars. What if the man from the library came after me again?
"A lot of small-town cops would let you off the hook like that, sure. Some would even take a bribe. I'm not one of them."
"Does it matter that I was drugged?" He laughed darkly.
"Drugged."
"My ex-boyfriend gave me a card laced with perfume earlier tonight. I opened the card, and the next thing I knew, I passed out." When Detective Basso didn't interrupt me, I pressed forward. "I slept for more than 2 hours. When I woke up, the library was closed. I was locked in the media lab. Someone had tied the doorknob." I trailed off, closing my mouth. He gestured for more.
"Come on now. Don't leave me at that cliffhanger."
I realized a moment too late that I'd just incriminated myself. I'd put myself at the library tonight in the media lab. First thing tomorrow, when the library opened, they were going to report the broken window to the police, and I had no doubt who Detective Basso would come looking for first.
"You were in the media lab," he prompted. "What happened next?"
Too late to back out now. I'd have to finish and hope for the best. Maybe something I said would convince Detective Basso it wasn't my fault, that everything I'd done was justified. "Someone had tied the door to the media lab shut. I threw a computer through the window to get out." He tipped his head back and laughed.
There's a name for girls like you, Nora Gray. Crazy makers. You're like the fly that nobody can shoo away.
He walked back to his patrol car and stretched the radio out the open driver's side door. Radioing dispatch, he said,
I need someone to swing by the library and check out the media lab. Let me know what you find.
He leaned back against his car, eyes flicking to his watch.
How many minutes do you think it'll take for them to get back to me? I've got your confession, Nora. I could book you for trespassing and vandalism.
Trespassing would imply I wasn't tied inside the library against my will. I sounded nervous.
If someone drugged you and trapped you in the lab, what are you doing here now, roaring down Hickory at 55 miles an hour?
I wasn't supposed to get away. I broke out of the room while he was coming up the elevator to get me.
He? You saw him? Let's have a description.
I didn't see him, but it was a guy. His footsteps were heavy when he came down the stairwell after me. Too heavy for a girl.
You're stammering. Usually that means you're lying.
I'm not lying. I was tied in the lab and someone was coming up the elevator to get me.
Right.
Who else would have been in the building that late? I snapped.
A janitor? He offered easily.
He wasn't dressed like a janitor. When I looked up in the stairwell, I saw dark pants and dark tennis shoes.
So when I take you to court, you're going to tell the judge that you're an expert on janitorial apparel?
The guy followed me out of the library, got into his car, and chased me. A janitor wouldn't do that. The radio popped with static, and Detective Basso leaned inside for the receiver.
Finished walking through the library, a man's voice crackled through the radio. Nothing.
Detective Basso cut cool, suspicious eyes to me.
Nothing? You sure? I repeat, nothing.
Nothing? Instead of relief, I felt panic. I'd smashed the lab window. I had. It was real. It wasn't my imagination. It wasn't. Calm down, I ordered myself. This had happened before. It wasn't new. In the past, it was always a mind game. It was someone working behind the scenes trying to manipulate my mind. Was it happening all over again? But why? I needed to think this through. I shook my head, ridiculously wishing the jester would shake out an answer. Detective Basso ripped the top sheet off his ticket pad and slapped it into my hand. My eyes brushed over the balance at the bottom. $229?
You were going 30 over and driving a car that doesn't belong to you. Pay the fine or I'll see you in court.
I don't have this kind of money.
Get a job. Maybe it'll keep you out of trouble.
Please don't do this, I said, injecting all the pleading that I possessed into my voice. Detective Basso studied me.
2 months ago, a kid with no ID, no family, and no traceable past wound up dead in the high school gym.
Jules's death was ruled a suicide, I said automatically, but sweat tingled the back of my neck. What did this have to do with my ticket?
The same night he disappeared, the high school counselor lit your house on fire, then did her own disappearance act. There's a link between these two bizarre incidents.
His dark brown eyes pinned me in place.
You.
What are you saying?
Tell me what really happened that night, and I can make your ticket go away.
I don't know what happened. I lied, because there was no alternative. Telling the truth would leave me worse off than having to pay the ticket. I couldn't tell Detective Basso about fallen angels and Nephilim. He'd never believe my story if I confessed that Dabria was an angel of death, or that Jules was a descendant of a fallen angel.
Your call,
Detective Basso said, flicking his business card at me before folding himself inside his car.
If you change your mind, you know how to reach me.
I glanced at the card as he roared off. Detective Ecanus Basso, 207-555-3333. The ticket felt heavy in my hand, heavy and hot. How was I going to come up with $200? I couldn't borrow the money from my mom. She could barely afford groceries. Patch had the money, but I told him I could take care of myself. I told him to get out of my life. What did it say about me if I ran back to him the moment I hit trouble? It was admitting he'd been right all along. It was admitting I needed him. Chapter 12. Tuesday after class, I was on my way out of the building to meet V, who'd skipped class to hang out with Rickson, but promised to swing back by school at noon to chauffeur me home, when my cell phone chirped. I opened the text message just as V hollered my name from the street.
Yo, babe!
Over here!
I walked to where she was parallel parked at the curb and folded my arms on the open window frame. Well, was it worth it?
Skipping class? Heck yeah!
Rickson and I spent the morning playing Xbox at his place. Halo 2. She reached over and unlatched the passenger door.
Sounds romantic, I said, climbing in.
Don't knock it till you've tried it. Violence really puts guys in the mood.
In the mood? Is there something I should know about?
V flashed a 100-watt grin.
We kissed. Oh, man, it was good. It started out all slow and gentle, and then Rickson really started getting into it.
Okay, I cut in loudly. Had I been this sappy when Patch and I were together and V was odd man out? I prayed not.
Where to now?
She scooted back into traffic.
I'm tired of studying. I need to inject a little excitement into my life, and that ain't gonna happen with my nose in a book.
What did you have in mind?
Old Orchard Beach. I'm in the mood for some sun and sand, plus my tan could use a base coat.
Old Orchard Beach sounded perfect. It had a long pier that stretched out over the water, and on the beach amusement park, and fireworks, and dancing after dark. Unfortunately, the beach would have to wait. I jiggled my cell phone.
We already have plans tonight.
V leaned sideways to read the text message and grimaced.
Marcy's party reminder? For real? I didn't realize you guys were new BFFs.
I was told that missing her party is the surest way to sabotage my social life.
She's such a hoe. Missing her party is the surest way to make my life complete.
Might want to rethink your attitude, because I'm going, and you're coming with me. V pressed back against her seat, her arms going rigid on the steering wheel.
What's her angle, anyway? Why'd she invite you?
We're chemistry partners.
Seems to me like you're forgiving her for that black eye awfully fast.
I owe it to her to at least show up for an hour. As her chemistry partner, I added.
So you're saying the reason we're dragging ourselves to Marcy's party tonight is because you sit beside her every morning in chemistry?
V gave me the look of someone who knows better. I knew it was a lame excuse, but not as lame as the truth. I needed to make absolutely certain Patch had moved on to Marcy. When I'd touched his scars 2 nights ago and been transported into his memory, he'd seemed reserved with Marcy. Up until their kiss, he'd even been short with her. I hadn't made up my mind how he felt about her, but if he'd moved on, it would make it that much easier for me to do likewise. A confirmed relationship between Patch and Marcy would make it easy to hate him, and I wanted to hate him, for both our sakes.
Your breath smells like liar, liar, pants on fire, V said. This isn't about you and Marcy. This is about Patch and Marcy. You want to find out what's going on between them.
I tossed my hands in the air.
Fine. Is that so wrong?
Man, she said, wagging her head, you really are a glutton for punishment. I thought maybe we could look in her bedroom, see if we find anything that proves they're together.
Like used condoms?
Suddenly my breakfast was rising up my esophagus. I hadn't thought of that. Were they sleeping together? No, I didn't believe it. Patch wouldn't do that to me. Not with Marcy.
I know, V said. We could steal her diary.
The one she's been carrying around since freshman year?
The one she swears would make the National Enquirer look tame, she said, sounding strangely gleeful. If something is going on between her and Patch, it'll be in the diary.
I don't know.
Oh, come on. We'll give it back after we're done. No harm, no foul.
How? Toss it on her porch and run? She'll kill us if she finds out we took it.
Sure. Toss it on her porch, or take it during the party, read it somewhere, and put it back before we leave.
It just seems wrong.
We won't tell anyone what we read. It'll be our secret. It's not wrong if nobody gets hurt.
I wasn't sold on stealing Marcy's diary, but I could tell V wasn't going to let it drop. The most important thing was getting her to agree to come to the party with me. I wasn't sure I was courageous enough to go on my own, especially since I couldn't count on having a single friend there. So I said, "You'll pick me up tonight, then?"
Count on it. Hey, can we light her bedroom on fire before we leave?
No! She can't know we were snooping in it.
Yeah, but subtle really isn't my style.
I looked sideways, eyebrows peaked. No kidding.
It was just after 9 when V and I climbed the hill leading up to Marcy's neighborhood. Coldwater's socioeconomic map is easily determined by a simple test. Drop a marble on any street in town. If the marble rolls downhill, you're upper class. If the marble doesn't roll at all, you're middle class. And if you lose the marble in a vapor of fog before you have a chance to find out if it rolls, you're, well, you live in my neighborhood, the backwoods. V pushed the neon uphill. Marcy's neighborhood was older, with mature trees that spilled above the street, blocking all moonlight. The homes had professionally landscaped yards and half circles for driveways. The architecture was Georgian colonial. Every house was white with black trim. V had the neon's windows rolled down, and in the distance we heard the steady pulse of blaring hip-hop.
"What's her address again?" V asked, squinting through the windshield. "These houses are so far off the road, I can't read the numbers over the garages."
1220 Brenchley Street. We came to an intersection and V turned onto Brenchley. The music intensified as we cruised down the block, and I assumed it meant we were headed in the right direction. Cars were parked bumper to bumper down both sides of the street. As we passed an elegantly remodeled carriage house, the music reached an all-time high, vibrating the car. Flocks of people were cutting across the lawn, streaming inside the house. Marcy's house. One look at it, and I had to wonder why she shoplifted. For the thrill of it? To escape her parents' carefully and perfectly crafted image?
I didn't dwell on it longer. A deep ache swirled in my stomach. Parked in the driveway was Patch's black Jeep Commander. Obviously, he'd been one of the first to arrive. He'd probably been inside alone with Marcy hours before the party started. Doing what? I didn't want to know. I sucked in a deep breath and I told myself I could handle this. And wasn't this the evidence I'd come looking for?
What are you thinking? V asked, her gaze also glued to the commander as we rolled past.
That I want to throw up?
All over Marcy's foyer would be nice. But seriously, are you okay with Patch being here?
I set my jaw, tilting my chin up slightly.
Marcy invited me tonight. I have the same right to be here as Patch. I'm not going to let him dictate where I go and what I do.
Funny, because that's exactly what I was doing.
Marcy's front door was open, leading into a dark marble hall crammed with bodies gyrating to Jay-Z. The foyer merged into a large sitting room with a high ceiling and dark Victorian furniture. All of the furniture, including the coffee table, was being used for seating. V hesitated in the doorway.
"Just taking a moment to mentally prepare for this," she called to me over the music. "I mean, the place is going to be infested with Marcy. Marcy portraits, Marcy furniture, Marcy odors.
Speaking of portraits, we should try to find some old family pictures. I'd like to see what Marcy's dad looked like 10 years ago. When his dealership commercials come on TV, I can't decide if it's plastic surgery that makes him look so young or just massive amounts of makeup."
I gripped her elbow and yanked her flush against me.
"You are not ditching me now."
V peered inside, frowning. "All right, but I'm warning you. If I see a single pair of panties, I'm out of here. Same goes for used condoms."
I opened my mouth, then snapped it shut. The chances of seeing both were fairly high, and it was in my best interest not to officially accept her terms. I was saved from further discussion by Marcy, who sashayed out of the darkness holding a punch bowl. She divided a critical glance between us.
"I invited you," she told me, "but I didn't invite her."
"Good to see you, too," V said.
Marcy scrutinized V slowly, head to toe. "Didn't you used to be on some stupid color diet? Looks to me like you gave up before you even started."
She turned her attention to me.
"And you? Nice black eye."
"Did you hear something, Nora?" V asked.
"I thought I heard something."
"You definitely heard something," I agreed.
"Could that be a dog fart I heard?" V asked me.
I nodded.
"I think so."
Marcy's eyes thinned to slits.
"Ha ha." "There it went again," V said. "Apparently this dog has real bad gas. Maybe we should feed it Tums."
Marcy thrust the punch bowl at us.
"Donation? Nobody gets inside without one."
"What?" V and I said at the same time.
"Donation.
You didn't really think I invited you here without an agenda, did you? I need your cash, pure and simple.
V and I eyed the bowl, which was swimming with dollar bills.
What's the money for? I asked.
New cheerleading uniforms. The squad wants ones with bare midriffs, but the school's too cheap to spring for new ones, so I'm fundraising.
This should be interesting, V said. The term slut squad will take on a whole new meaning.
That does it, said Marcy, her face darkening with blood. You want in, you better have a 20. If you make another comment, I'll boost the cover charge to 40.
V poked me in the arm. I didn't sign up for this. You pay.
10 each? I offered.
No way. This was your idea. You pick up the tab.
I faced Marcy and pulled on a smile.
$20 is a lot, I reasoned.
Yeah, but think how amazing I'll look in that uniform, she said. I have to do 500 crunches every night so I can trim my waist from 25 to 24 inches before school starts. I can't have an inch of fat if I'm going to wear a bare midriff.
I didn't dare pollute my mind with a mental image of Marcy in a promiscuous cheerleading uniform, and instead said, How about 15?
Marcy cupped a hand on her hip and looked ready to slam the door.
Okay, calm down, we'll pay, said V, reaching into her back pocket.
She stuffed a wad of cash into the bowl, but it was dark and I couldn't tell how much.
You owe me big time, she told me.
You're supposed to let me count the money first, Marcy said, digging through the bowl, trying to recapture V's donation.
I just assumed 20 was too high for you to count, V said.
My apologies. Marcy's eyes went slitty again, then she turned on her heel and carted the bowl back into the house.
How much did you give her? I asked V.
I didn't. I tossed in a condom. I lifted my eyebrows. Since when do you carry condoms?
I picked one up off the lawn on our way up the walk. Who knows, maybe Marcy'll use it. Then I'll have done my part to keep her genetic material out of the gene pool.
V and I stepped all the way inside and put our backs to the wall. On a velvet chaise in the sitting room, several couples were tangled together like a pile of paperclips. The center of the room was filled with dancing bodies. Off the sitting room, an arched entryway led to the kitchen, where people were drinking and laughing. Nobody paid V or me any attention, and I tried to rally my spirits at the realization that getting inside Marcy's bedroom unnoticed wasn't going to be as hard as I'd thought. Trouble was, I was beginning to think I hadn't come here tonight to snoop through Marcy's bedroom and find evidence that she was with Patch. In fact, I was dangerously close to thinking I'd come because I knew Patch would be here, and I wanted to see him. It looked like I was going to get my chance. Patch appeared in the entrance to Marcy's kitchen, dressed in a black polo shirt and dark jeans. I wasn't used to studying him from a distance. His eyes were the color of night, and his hair curling under his ears looked like it was 6 weeks past needing a cut. He had a body that instantly attracted the opposite sex, but his stance said, I'm not open to conversation. His hat was still missing, which meant it was probably in Marcy's possession. No big deal, I reminded myself. It was no longer my business. Patch could give his ball cap to whoever he wanted. Just because he'd never loaned it to me didn't hurt my feelings. Jen Martin, a girl I'd had math with freshman year, was talking to Patch, but he looked distracted. His eyes circled the sitting room, watchful, as if he wasn't about to trust a single soul there. His posture was relaxed but attentive, almost like he expected something to happen at any moment. Before his eyes made it around to me, I shifted my gaze. Best not to be caught staring with regret and longing. Anthony Amowitz smiled and waved at me from across the room. I automatically smiled back. We'd had PE together this year, and while I'd hardly said more than 10 words to him, it was nice to think somebody was excited to see me and V here.
Why is Anthony Amowitz using his pimp smile on you? V asked.
I rolled my eyes. You're only calling him a pimp because he's here, at Marcy's.
Yeah, so?
He's being nice. I elbowed her.
Smile back.
Being nice? He's being horny. Anthony raised his red plastic cup to me and shouted something, but it was too hard to hear over the music.
What?
I called back.
You look great!
A goofy smile was plastered on his face.
Oh boy, V said. Not just a pimp, but a smashed pimp.
So maybe he's a little drunk.
Drunk and hoping to corner you alone in a bedroom upstairs.
Ugh. 5 minutes later, we were still holding our position just inside the front door. I'd had half a can of beer accidentally sloshed on my shoes, but luckily there'd been no vomit. I was about to suggest to V that we move away from the open door, the direction everyone seemed to run moments before spilling the contents of their stomach, when Brenna Dubois came up and held a red plastic cup out to me.
"This is for you. Compliments of the guy across the room."
"Told you," V whispered sideways. I stole a quick glance at Anthony, who winked.
Thanks, but I'm not interested," I told Brenna. I wasn't very experienced when it came to parties, but I knew not to accept drinks of questionable origin. For all I knew, it was tainted with GHB.
"Tell Anthony I don't drink from anything but a sealed can." Wow, I sounded even dumber than I felt.
"Anthony?"
Her face twisted with confusion.
"Yeah, Anthony Pimpowitz," V said. "The guy who's making you play delivery girl?"
"You thought Anthony gave me the cup?" She shook her head. "Try the guy on the other side of the room." She turned to where Patch had been standing only minutes ago.
"Well, he was over there. I guess he left. He was hot and wearing a black shirt, if that helps."
"Oh, boy," V said again, this time under her breath.
"Thanks," I told Brenna, seeing no choice but to take the cup. She faded back into the crowd, and I set the cup of what smelled like cherry Coke on the entry table behind me. Was Patch trying to send a message? Reminding me of my flop of a fight at the Devil's Handbag when Marcy had doused me with cherry Coke? V pushed something into my hand.
"What's this?" I asked.
"A walkie-talkie. I borrowed them from my brother. I'll sit on the stairs and keep watch. If anybody comes up, I'll radio."
"You want me to snoop in Marcy's bedroom now?"
"I want you to steal the diary."
"Yeah, about that, I'm sort of having a change of heart."
"Are you kidding me?" V said. "You can't chicken out now. Imagine what's in that diary. This is your one big chance to find out what's going on with Marcy and Patch. You can't pass that up."
"But it's wrong."
"It won't feel wrong if you steal it so fast that the guilt doesn't have time to soak in."
I gave her a pointed look.
"Self-talk helps too," V added. "Tell yourself this isn't wrong enough times, and you'll start to believe it."
"I'm not taking the diary. I just want to look around and steal Patch's hat back."
"I'll pay you the e-zine's entire annual budget if you deliver the diary to me in the next 30 minutes, V said, beginning to sound desperate.
"That's why you want the diary? To publish it in the e-zine?
Think about it. It could make my career."
"No," I said firmly. "And what's more, bad, V." She heaved a sigh.
"Well, it was worth a try."
I looked at the walkie-talkie in my hand. "Why can't we just text?"
"Spies don't text."
"How do you know?"
"How do you know they do?"
Figuring it wasn't worth an argument, I tucked the walkie-talkie into the waistband of my jeans. "Are you sure Marcy's bedroom is on the second floor?"
"One of her ex-boyfriends sits behind me in Spanish. He told me every night at 10 sharp, Marcy undresses with the lights on. Sometimes when he and his friends are bored, they drive over to watch the show. He said Marcy never rushes, and by the time she finishes, he has a cramp in his neck from staring up. He also said there was this one time..."
I clapped my hands over my ears.
"Stop!" "Hey, if my brain has to be polluted with these kinds of details, I figure yours should too. The whole reason I know all this vomit-inducing information is because I was trying to help you."
I flicked my eyes toward the stairs. My stomach seemed to weigh twice as much as it had 3 minutes ago. I hadn't done anything, and I was already sick with guilt. When had I become low enough to snoop in Marcy's bedroom? When had I let Patch twist and tangle me up this way?
"I guess I'm going up," I said unconvincingly.
"You've got my back?"
"Roger that."
I climbed the stairs. There was a bathroom with tile floors and crown molding at the top. I moved down the hall to my left, passing what looked to be a guest bedroom and an exercise room equipped with a treadmill and elliptical. I backtracked, this time taking the hall to the right. The first door was cracked, and I peeked inside. The room's color scheme was a frothy pink. Pink walls, pink drapes, and a pink duvet with pink throw pillows. The closet had spewed itself onto the bed, floor, and other furniture surfaces. Several photographs, blown to poster size, were tacked to the walls, and all were of Marcy posing seductively in her Razorbills cheerleading uniform. I experienced a mild rush of nausea. then saw Patch's ball cap on the dresser. Shutting myself in the room, I rolled the bill of the cap into a narrow cone and crammed it into my back pocket. Beneath the ball cap,